Session number 18464, Robert Fitzgerald, Reel 1.
Robert Fitzgerald, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
Carson Station, Vancouver Island, British Columbia.
Which year was this?
In 1912.
Did you grow up and have your schooling on Vancouver Island?
Yes, I was there. My father was in the Okanagan. I've got that almost on history, isn't it? The father was there in Okanagan at the time. My aunt was on the island. I was born there. I went back there for 4 years. Then we came back in the middle of World War One, and Esquimalt, just outside of Victoria, where my father served with the Canadian Medical Corps. And at the end of the war, we started up a poultry farm, a place called Lankford, which is 8 miles out of Victoria. And we were there from about 1919 till 1926 or 7. And then we went, I was still going to school. By that time, I was going to school in St. Louis College, Victoria. Then we went up Ireland after I left school, working on a farm for a year, and then my mother died in 1929, and my father and I lived for 10 years in a place called Zuhedum, which is 3 miles out of Duncan, Vancouver Island, and near Carson Bay. And I worked in a hardware store until I was called up for the Defense of Canada when Canada declared war on the 6th of September 1939.
How did you feel when you heard the news that Canada was at war?
Well, I had been in the non-permanent militia since 1932, the Canadian Scottish Regiment, Highland Regiment, and when it came to being called up, I said to my father he was a dependent of mine, and therefore I did not have to volunteer, volunteer for OCs, and he said, you volunteer for OCs, otherwise you're not my son. So I volunteered for OC service in the 10th of September. I think it's on there. Is it on there? Yes. 10th of September. And we were in Victoria and around that area for a little while. They went to Burton, Nova Scotia in 1940, I think it was. I've got it written down there. We were there for a year, and we came over here in late 41, I think it was.
Can you tell me about this regiment that you belong to, the Canadian
Scottish?
Scottish
Regiment? Yes. What? There's some photos up there of the taken in Albahira Barracks in Aldershot. That photo up there. Well, it was the old 16th of the World War One, and then it was formed in the non-permanent active militia, and we were 1st and 2nd battalions. The 1st battalion was in Victoria and the lower part of the island. I was 40 miles up, and I was A company of the 2nd battalion. It had its headquarters, I think, in Nanaimo, where B company was. I think it would be. And other companies were spread around the island and also Salisbury Island, I think. Anyhow, you want the sort of regimental history? Or
no, don't worry about that.
No.
What did you think of the basic training that you got you first joined the army?
We got a lot of good basic training, and then of course eventually I was in the quartermaster stores, and I was a CQMS a good bit of the time. In fact, I went over as a CQMS, and from when we left Victoria, I went with a party of 30 others to get set up in DeBert, Nova Scotia, which was at that time being developed into a huge army camp. And I would say that the 3rd Division was probably got together there. And then we hung around there for about a year. Now, the Battle of Britain was what, 1940? 1940. Well, we didn't come overseas, didn't leave there until at least 41, I suppose. Yes, 41.
What was the voyage across the Atlantic like?
Well, it was a good experience. We were on board ship, and of course, in the dark at night, we're all down below deck all the time. We're in a large convoy, and we had to go at the speed of the slower ship. And I remember seeing the corvettes every now and again would shoot off at an angle, no matter what the weather was, or yes, water was, because there had been submarines in the area. And I gather we were handed over about mid-Atlantic from the Canadian Navy to the Royal Navy. And eventually landed in Greenock in Scotland. And we went straight down by train to Aldershot. And we stayed in Aldershot for a short time. And I was, my company was sent out to Dean Park in Horsham. That was our first place. We were there for about a year or so. And do a certain amount of training all the time, which speaks well, looking back on it, how they kept us occupied. Because after we were here for 2.5 years before we went into any action.
How did you get on with the English people?
Well, I had one or two relations here, and one of my father's nieces said, I had an aunt in Cranes. She said, oh, I've got an unmarried sister-in-law in Shamley Green, and you go and see her. So I said, why? I said, you're matchmaking. Well, anyhow, it had worked out. That's what you managed to. But we got on very well with the English people here. And, of course, as I say, I had this relations on my mother's side and my father's side. The father's side wasn't many. I mean, two cousins and an uncle. And on my mother's side, there was 3 or 4 aunts, various cousins. They've gradually sort of all died off, all of my generations. I think there's one left somewhere in Oxford. I've never really met her.
So did you not have any problems with the English people?
No, I had to fit in. We didn't mind. There was no problems. No, we got on very well. They were very friendly to us. Helped us a lot.
So you married the lady in Shanghai?
And then married, and you know, she was in, well, we were, actually our home was in London, I think. Married in 1943. And then I was, few months doing a training course in Aldershot. It was training troops coming over, taking them out onto the firing ranges and grenade ranges in the vicinity of Aldershot. And then in 1943, November or December, I rejoined with a regiment who were then, by that time, stationed in the Isle of Wight. And that's where I was at D-Day, and we pushed off from there.
Can you tell me the details about going across on D-Day, please?
Yes.
Don't worry about this, no. Just go from memory.
First of all, we were about 3 or 4 days beforehand, we were incarcerated in a big camp outside Southampton. We couldn't get in or out completely secure. And then we went on board ship. I was with supplies, therefore I went on a tank landing craft with my truck driver. and we were up on the deck, and we were chained to the deck, and then because the weather was so bad, we apparently spent the night of the 5th of June, 4th and 5th, I think it was, opposite Ryde, the Isle of Wight, for goodness sake. And and pushed off that evening until we arrived outside France. The landing time was 5 o'clock, and mine was 8 plus 12, which was 5 o'clock in the evening. And oddly enough, we seemed to have a grandstand view of the whole thing. In the distance, we could hear the firing and all that sort of thing. Certainly not a smoke fog. We drifted in with the tide, and we were well supported with British Royal Naval ships, and there may have been some Canadian ones I wouldn't know. And we were watching, waiting to be taken off, and gradually drifting in. And then a great big, what they called a rhino, which looked was a flat sort of barge powered by two outboard motors, large outboard motors, and that brought up to the ship, and we drove off onto that, and that took us towards the shore to within about 2 feet of water. We drove off that and up the beach. But when I was on the landing craft, a Stuka came over, just before, as it was coming up to us. A Stuka came over and dropped a couple of shells, missed it, and I said to the chap when I got there, I said, "Was that Stuka that went over?" And he said, "Aye, it were." He said, "My steel helmet was above the end of Rhino, so I just shook my fist at him, and I said, he never got me in Liverpool or London, and he ain't going to get me yet." And he said, "The beggar missed," which he did. I said, "Well, if we're going to appear like that, we're going to win this war." And that was my comments on that. And then when I got on the beach, I was met by my company sergeant major. I remarked, I thought it was rather fortune to a certain extent, but also probably timing and scheming, that he knew exactly where, or had been told exactly where we were going to land. And then we took the truck and joined others and went a couple 3 miles inland where I found the rest of the troops. And there was a little incident there. The driver went rather close to a slit trench and the land gave way. And our 30 hundredweight loaded up to 3 tons fell in. So I thought, well, that would create a certain amount of problem unloading and everything else. And he said, "Oh, nothing doing." He went to the other drivers, borrowed their tow ropes, went to the sergeant major, wanted 40 men, 20 on each rope, and pulled that 30 hundredweight loaded and all right out of the hole. And I thought that was pretty good training. Obviously, whether they had practices before, I don't know. But it's surprising. And then we were there for a while, whilst we were trying to get hold of Bayou. Yes. And then as watched the bombing of Caen. Eventually we were in Caen for a while, and then we went up the coast to Palikari area. It was the first view I had of the white cliffs of Dover. And yet I've been stationed very close to them when I was in Seaford. Seaford's a little further up, but the white cliffs of Dover, more or less than Dover, but what do they call the Seven Sisters? Where's that? Is that between Seaford and Eastbourne, I think?
Somewhere near there, yeah.
Yes. Well, we had, at that time, we had patrols on the beach. And sometimes, one or two times, they didn't come back. And they were at night time, somebody came over in small boats and got landing, got them and took them away, taking them prisoners, I suppose. We didn't hear an awful lot of that sort of thing, but still, I believe that happened. But I feel a bit garbled on this now because...
No, but you said that you'd pushed up from Cong.
Yes.
What happened to you in Cong?
Well, we were there for a while after we'd sort of got it, but we... I was always just a little bit behind because I'm bringing rations up to the troop and back again. But we were stationed there for about, oh, I don't know, a week or two maybe. And then we went up towards the Pas-de-Calais area and then up from there to Holland.
How did you get on with the Norman civilians?
Well, they were quite good in a way. They were very glad to see us. And so, and I remember on one particular house, it was, hadn't been badly bombed, but it was rather dilapidated. And when we went back there in 1954, it was still there and hardly changed, except it had some ammunition boxes and of flowers on the window. And the girl was a wedding going on at the same time. She remembered us being there 10 years before. So,
Was your unit taking many casualties as it pushed
well,
out?
Well, we didn't take too many casualties because outside Bayeux, I don't know if this should be recorded really, but outside Bayeux we came across, I'm told, this is a story, four or five of my friends, they were captured. And they found them, and they were shot through the head. So they said, right, we don't take any prisoners. And we never did until we got to Holland. And then a party of Germans gave up to them, and they found there were Canadians in front of them, and they shivered like mad because they weren't frightened of us because we'd had a bad reputation. Now, that may not be official. I don't suppose it is. But I think it was factual.
So that was the turning point, the finding of those bodies who'd been shot.
Well, that made us say no prisoners. After all, you don't get hit in the forehead unless you're lined up and standing in front. And that wasn't the Geneva Conference. Because normally, Germans... went by Geneva, generally. And on the side, if it had been Japanese, I would have expected it. They wouldn't respect anything.
Did most of the men in the Canadian Scottish come from Vancouver and British Columbia?
Well, mainly British Columbia. We had them all over. When we were enlisting and coming down, they were coming down from 7 o'clock in the morning. A boat coming over from Vancouver to Victoria. They come from the inland, from the interior. And at night, men were coming down the north end of the island up to 11 o'clock at night. And we were just issuing them the evening ones. Four blankets, a knife, fork and spoon. Come to the kit the next morning. But they were mostly local. And then, of course, we got reinforcements as we went along. Came from various parts of the country. When we were in DeBert, Nova Scotia, it weeded out those who health wasn't too good, I suppose. They couldn't all come over with us.
What were your main problems doing your job in Europe?
Well, I knew I was getting the supplies and finding out where. I always had to rely upon either maps or verbal instructions where to go. And once or twice I went too far. And the one in 1945, I went right up to the German trench. The head come out and I thought, oh, that's not what I want, helmets. I'd gone up too far. I walked back after I got shot. The fellow's on the house. He says, you passed by here about an hour ago in a truck? I said, yeah. Oh, he said, I was supposed to have stopped you and didn't. I said, well, you better go up there and get your supper because that's where it is.
Did you get wounded then?
That was remarkable because I got hit, not the arm taken off, and I went practically every type of transport and finished up in, I think it was Brussels at 8 o'clock in the morning, wrapped me in plaster and sent me off to England. I was in the Horsham Hospital, or one of the Canadian branch of Horsham Hospital, by 4 o'clock that afternoon, within 24 hours.
Whereabouts in Europe were you?
Cleves, in the Hockwell Forest. We were just getting ready to go over the Rhine.
So that must have been the early part of
1945. Yes, about January, February 45. I think I was hit sometime in February. And that took me out altogether. Back in Vancouver, General Hospital, military hospital. I think it was about May, I suppose. Yes. And then I was there for a year. Well, all told, a year and a half.
What about that winter of 44-45 when you were in the Netherlands?
We were in Nijmegen for quite a long time. Spent Christmas in Nijmegen. And that was when I remember taking the Christmas meal out to the troops over various places. They were. And they were all back in the trenches by 3 o'clock in the afternoon because the Ardennes, the Americans were attacked in the Ardennes, which is not too far away, I believe. And so they were all back in their blooming trenches by 3 o'clock in the afternoon after having a Christmas lunch.
And Did you have any contact with V weapons? With V1s and V2s as you pushed?
Well, V2s, yes. I was in when we were in the Portakelly area, a little further up, really in Holland, getting into Holland. They were flying over us. We were in a ammunition dump at the time, and we saw these things flying across. They didn't look very high up and they were spitting fire, and they said, well, don't you stop here, because if you do, we'll get blown up. And they were, we heard out afterwards, of course, they were on their way to England. That's where England got the beating of the V2. But we saw them start, and I think we eventually got hold of the, captured the area. And that came to the end of their being sent over, but we watched them going over. They looked sort of 500 feet up in the air, but maybe they're more.
After you were wounded, did you make a full recovery?
Eventually, oh yes, as I am now. I got a solid arm and bolts and nuts and bolts and that sort of thing. So they broke right off, you see, and they tried to join it together. And it didn't work, so they had to lap it like that. But that took over a year to do all that.
Did you rejoin the regiment before?
No, I was discharged because I was unable to meet the required medical standards, which I said at the time means I couldn't use my right arm to get a good salute. But that was only my frivolous way of commenting on it. But then I came back over here, brought my father with me. By that time my wife had started the school, as I told you about. And I've been over here ever since, August 46.
How did your father feel about having to uproot himself and come to England?
He wasn't uprooting, he was only too glad to get back to England. He was over there 4 years and he never settled down. He never really settled down. My mother was exactly the same. They had their own friends, but very few friends. None of them really settled down and lived for the day they came back to England. My father was around here, and as I said, we came back in 46 and he died in 62.
Why was it that he preferred England to Canada?
What?
What, In what way did he prefer England to Canada?
Well, he's home. He was English. My mother was born in Kent, and he was born, actually, he was born in London, where is it? No, where's that park in London near, places? Near Chalk Farm, not too far from Chalk Farm.
Belsize Park.
Belsize Park, up in that direction somewhere. He was born there, then he was down in Devon and that sort of thing. But he was in Canada twice. The second time he went right across, he didn't stop. He was in the Prairies in 98. Came over to join the Boer War. They wouldn't have him. That upset him a bit, I think. But this is all, that's all history, family history, that is.
And how did you take to settling down in England?
Well, it was two against one. My wife would never settle down in England any more than my mother did. And because she was too old to go there. If you, a girl from this country to go over there shouldn't be over the age of 20, 25. Otherwise, they've made their friends here, their anchorage is here, and this, they've had a very traumatic time here and prepared to have a different style of life altogether. My aunt, who was my mother's elder sister, she came over much younger, and she settled down over there. But my mother was always something hoping to sometime go back to England, but she never did.
But you were happy. You'd grown up in
happy.
Canada.
Now, of course, if I hadn't had him, I sure would have gone back, and I would have gone up into the Peace River area. But he wouldn't have come with me because he said he didn't want the cold. And of course, I had to look after him because, after all, you know, he and I left. That's all. We didn't have any brothers or sisters or anything like that. So we lived together on our own for 10 years. And he lived, as I say, he moved over to Salisbury Island during the war, and he stayed there for 5 years till I came back. And I was in Vancouver for over a year. Only about 15 months altogether in the Shaughnessy Hospital. And then I got up, uprooted, and came back to England here. And I thought, well, I'll find something to do here. It was a case of two against one, and I knew perfectly well my wife would never have settled down over here in Canada. She wouldn't. So, I mean, you take it as you find it.
What job did you eventually find?
Eventually, I got a job with the Civil Service. I was over here at Skyways with the aircraft people as a night clerk, and I never did so little and got so well paid in my life. Finally, I was writing a report at 7:45 in the morning, what movement of aircraft in the aerodrome, and that was my night's work. So we got a whole lot of it, got the sack. And I think it was Skyways left Dunsfold, and I think they went somewhere into Essex. I'm not sure where, what happened. Anyhow, then it was taken over by British Airways, because ever since, the farmers never did get their land back. Dunsfold now, as you know, is well developed. But then I got a job with the War Agriculture Committee here in Guildford, and then went from there to the Civil Service. I thought, well, I was helping my wife with the school, so I thought, well, it won't be too strenuous, be a source of income, what there was of it, and I'd have plenty of time to work in the school, which I did. But